My name is John McKendrick, and I am Professor of Social Justice at Glasgow Caledonian University. I'm delighted to be able to contribute to this signposting equity sway exercise. Now, my main research is looking at child poverty in Scotland, with a particular interest in poverty as it relates to education. However, what I want to talk to you about for this sway is another of my research interests, and that's on children's play. Now, how does play relate to education? Well, there are a number of ways in which we can understand the relationship between play and education. For some, play is education, that the value that children get, and adults of course play too, but here we focus on children, that the value that children get from play is in and of itself education. For others, perhaps working in education, we see play as being a means towards education. And that very much underpins the thinking of organisations such as Upstart Scotland, that are concerned then to have a later starting age to formal schooling to allow for a play-based education in the early years of primary school. For others, play is important to education, but because it is an antidote to it, that what play provides is useful switch-off time, which enables the young learner to make the most of learning opportunities. Play allows batteries to be recharged so that they can make the most of learning when they are required to do so. But for others, perhaps play is a distraction from education, and that too much time spent in non-education activities becomes a problem. And rather than being an asset, it is a problem that has to be overcome. So there are different ways in which we can understand how play relates to education. And I think it's important that we think through how we position ourselves in relation to that. But another important aspect of play is the idea of impoverishment. Now, there are different ways in which we can understand impoverishment in children's play. We can look at it in terms of intra-generational equity or inter-generational equity. In terms of intra-generational equity, it seems to be the case then that not all children have access to similar play opportunities today. And indeed, one of the metrics that's used to measure child poverty is a multiple deprivation index in which we look at different aspects of children's life, some of which focus on play. So to take just a few examples, the poorest 20% of children in the UK, it's reported then that 15% of these 20% of poorest children do not have access to leisure equipment on the grounds of they want it but can't afford it, compared to only 1% of the 20 to 40% most least deprived, and indeed none of the very most deprived. So 15% of the poorest children want but can't afford leisure equipment, compared to virtually none of the most affluent children. And perhaps what's interesting in terms of school life is that 10% of these same poorest children report that they can't afford to go on a school trip. 10%, again, compared to virtually none of the most affluent 40%. So there's impoverishment within children today. But there's also a sense in which things have changed through time. And the play experiences that children have access to today are worse than those in previous generations. A few years ago, we undertook a survey to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Play Day in the UK. And we asked respondents, which numbered almost 2,000 across the UK, to compare their play experiences to those of their children. A 25-year gap between play when they were a child and contemporary play. And what was reported by adults today was that they both played more outdoors than indoors, that they used a wider range of space within the neighbourhood, and that more of their play was based with friends compared to contemporary children. A sense in which the character of play had changed quite dramatically over a generation. However, impoverishment is something that's not quite so straightforward. In other work that I've undertaken, I've looked at the stories of professional footballers and how they recall their experiences of growing up in so-called deprived areas. And what comes across when we look at these rich accounts of growing up in Scotland is that there's a sense in which living in a poor environment provided opportunities for children's play that perhaps would not be evident elsewhere. Now, some of these are very small scale, but are nevertheless significant in terms of children's lives. Let me give a couple of examples. Alex MacDonald, who was a player with Rangers and Hearts in his day, talking about growing up in Bridgeton in Glasgow. Football was my real passion though. When we were in the early teens, me and Jimmy, It's Jimmy Lumsden, also a successful player, cleared this big bit of spare ground to create her very own pitch. We even painted goals in the derelict buildings at either end, and a crowd of us would play there for as long as our legs would hold up. In my case, that was longer than most. I could run all day and in the summer nights, well till after the sun went down. Now, the fact there that we're able to find space and built up Glasgow, you know, and we're talking about a very densely populated Glasgow at the time, populating spare ground, colonising the built environment, adapting it and making it their own. It's also evident in creative use of everyday resources. So, for example, Kenny Dalglish talking and growing up in Milton. Goalposts were ready to hand. We just put our jackets down. Eventually, with my main gang of friends from Milton, we went big time. We got posts and nets. A friend's dad was a plumber, and he constructed these ingenious posts out of little conduit pipes. We could unscrew them and carry them to and from the park. How proud we felt. So two simple examples of how creative use was made of the everyday environment to facilitate play opportunities. And in this case, they are the playing of football about of two individuals that became successful in later life. Now, these examples then are interesting because they're suggestive then of the value of creative autonomy, which is important in terms of the creative economy that exists today. In fact, Pat Kane has argued in The Play Ethic that this encouragement of creativity, which can be facilitated through play, is of wider economic relevance. Rather than being removed from the economy and a distraction from it, play actually and a playful approach is integral for a successful country. Similar principles in terms of how we relate play and work to earlier that I talked about in terms of play and education. Now that brings me to the role of teachers then. And some work we did about a decade ago, in fact perhaps over a decade ago now, was a nationwide survey of school grounds in Scotland to understand how schools were making use of their grounds for play, for sport and for education. And one thing that came across was the extent to which use of school grounds was rule bound. Now, I know there are some restrictions in schools in terms of contractual obligations that make it difficult for them to adapt their school space, but we're talking about prior to these contracts being introduced. And what was interesting to us was the extent to which teachers were restricting access to play space outside in inclement weather. So when the weather was rough in inclement weather, we asked teachers whether or not children were allowed to use the grass or indeed were not allowed outside the space. Finding that in particular in primary schools, the majority of respondents were reporting that they restricted where children could play at break time or indeed whether or not they were allowed outside. Restrictions were particularly characteristic of primary schools, much more so interestingly than nursery schools and more so also than secondary and special schools. So that brings me to the conclusion of the talk, a toe in the water if you like, of the role of play in education. But I think it's useful for us as practitioners to think about the role that play plays in our education practice and to think about the ways in which we might come to a fruitful use of play for the benefit of education. Now that might be that accepting that play is education and valuing the competencies that children gain through activity, thinking about how play can facilitate education in terms of learning, which may not just be restricted to the very earliest years. Finding time for that antidote to play if we believe then that children need that switch off time and a balanced approach to life with time off is important if education is to be successful. Or indeed whether play is just simply a distraction for us and what we have to do is find ways of controlling and cajoling children to make the most of their educational time. So just to leave you with a question, what role does play in your educational practice? Thank you.